Eating is an emotional experience, which is why managing your weight needs to be a psychological one. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisswelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 93. Happy opening day, folks. Steve, great to be here talking baseball with you. And thanks to all our listeners for sharing the one of the best days of the year with us for a little Wins Above Fantasy. We got a great show ahead today where we're going to be talking about what you should be thinking on in the first opening day weekend, get into some players we're watching specifically, some situation, a little strategy. We got a little bit of everything, Steve. I'm super pumped. You guys, we will be here every Thursday throughout the season. If you're just tuning in at Wins Above Fantasy, you guys can follow us on Twitter at Wins Above Pod. I'm at Van_verified and Steve is at Stav8818. Steve? Happy opening day, man. What's on the docket for you?
Yeah, it's a great day. It should be a national holiday. I know that's like a cliche and worn out thing with every big sporting event, but for baseball diehards, like, you know, at least call in sick or something. I didn't. I'm still working today, but not as we record this. But you know, it's worthy of a holiday for us diehard baseball fans, and it's an honor to have a podcast that comes out on opening day. I feel like, you know, this is just how it works out. We release on Thursdays, but it's an honor to be released on the first day of the season. It's a cool thing, and we talk about it all winter and waiting for this day, and every day, every year, it's like the first day of school kind of thing, only a lot cooler, right? Because school kind of wears off, and then when you're a kid, it's like, oh, gotta wake up for school every day. But baseball, it's just fun every day. Now for the next 6 months, it's a great feeling, and I love the feeling of opening day. It'll never get old. Ugh. Just having a full season in front of us, it's awesome.
Best,
it's awesome.
And it's the worst when there's only like two games, because you get so excited, then you're like, that's it, I gotta wait till tomorrow. But this year they did it right.
Tomorrow's gonna be rough though, because there's only like two or three games, so it's like you know, that first weekend in March Madness, right? I was talking about this with a buddy, right? Like, you go from the feel of the sick, where it's 32 games, then it's this, then it's the round of 32, and then, you know, you're just,
you get withdrawals
from Thursday to Sunday. You're just basketball all day, and then Monday comes on, it's like, what do you do? It's like, that's what tomorrow is going to be like, just, you know, with baseball. But thankfully, Saturday and Sunday will be jam packed, and then for the next 6 months,
don't be getting picky.
Yeah,
don't be getting picky.
Every Friday and Saturday and Sunday will be full of baseball. It's great. It's great.
We get to check lineups. We get to, you know, scour Twitter for the, you know, the hot takes and the latest and greatest. So we're gonna get into all of it. But yeah, I'm so excited, man. I always take off work for it, and usually go golfing and then watch some games. This year I'm taking off work and had the terrible timing where I'll be on my India trip. So Steve will be podcasting without me next week, and hopefully I don't miss out on all of the, you know, Spencer Striders of the world this season by missing the first week. I'll have to have someone managing. So I know all our listeners care so much about that, Steve. Let's talk the episode. So we've got overall approach, strategy. Then we're going to get into some situations, some things that we're watching for. And then stay tuned for the players, guys, because we're going to talk about probably 15 players or so that we're keeping an eye on even as early as this first weekend, because you got to be quick to move. And that's kind of our segue, Steve, into the approach, kind of the strategy, just big picture. Give me the Steve Gisswelli mindset when you're really the shotgun goes off and you're already scratching and clawing for any advantage in your leagues.
As we're recording this on Tuesday night for the future for Thursday, I want this Thursday episode to be something that you could use in the future. So like, you know, like a an Inception level podcast, like a dream within a dream. Like the goal here is to like, okay, these are names that you should be keeping out for. You'll want to add them next week, but like look for them now, right? Like to try and give yourself a leg up. I don't know. That's a horrible explanation for what this is supposed to be. But I don't know if that made sense to anybody listening. But you know, the idea here is to give yourself a leg up and watch out for these guys and act quickly, or just whatever strategy, whether it's a player or just what to sort of do. That's what I think is the goal of this episode and what to do and what it will help you with, right? Just some guys to watch for.
It's like it's hard to give advice on what to do when you're listening to this right now, which is what you should be doing.
Okay.
So you're in the right place.
Here's a real life example. Like, if only I was watching out for like Adelis Garcia on opening day and bought into his 2-homer and 1-steal weekend, like if I thought that was real. Like hopefully this identifies a player or two that's like, oh, look at this, he did this, I want to jump on it. Like I want to jump on the Adelis Garcia ad that's a league winner early on. Yeah, I'm not saying we're going to do that, but that's what I hope we can try and do.
I think we got some good shots at it, Steve. So that's kind of the jump off point to topic one, which is the tools and the resources that we would recommend for someone who's listening. So, I mean, just to start, I think that one thing that I try to do extra on opening day is tune into the podcast. You know, there's a bevy that are out there in the industry. That's great. You know, you got your First Pitch podcast from Pitcherless as a little 15-20 minute recaps every day, which is great for the latest news, updates.
Shout out Casey Bubba, who took over that first episode first today. Did a great job.
Great job. Yeah. So, you know, be tuning into podcasts. In addition to that, you know, something I'm doing, Steve, that most of the industry, it seems like, does as well, is stay all over Twitter. You know, there's even Twitter accounts at MLBHR is the MLB home run update. You can sign up for alerts on your phone, so you're the first one to find out if, you know, that guy that you almost drafted but didn't draft hits a homer or hits 2 homers in a game, and you don't have to wait until they're at the top of the Yahoo or CBS queue that says recently added and everyone else is already doing it. You can get out ahead of those curves a little bit if you want to be quick to pounce. And then beyond that, I mean, the Discord as well. I know, Steve, you're living and breathing in there more than I am, but the Discord's another great place where people are just kind of breaking down, you know, good at bats or that was unlucky, this guy got robbed twice today, things like that. So that's just kind of a brain dump of some of the tools, resources I'm using in this opening weekend, and mainly just trying to be faster than all of my league mates. So I don't know if you have any additional things that you want to throw in there, but I think it's always good to share like best practices for people who are tuning in.
No, I think that's great. I think notifications are a great tool. I know that Underdog Fantasy, there used to be like that daily MLB lineup alerts that would tweet out all the lineups, but I think they stopped this year. And now it's Underdog_MLB. They basically tweet out every lineup every day, so you know who's playing. They tweet out big news, so like, you know, basically throughout the off season, it's like who gets placed on the IL, call ups, and they're really, really quick. So I have notifications on for that. It's Underdog_Fantasy. We actually have a channel in the Discord that's, you know, the MLB daily MLB lineups and news, and the bot basically just posts every tweet that account sends out because it's just lineups and then news. So that's a great one. I think that's a great resource. Turn on, you know, the accounts that you find useful, that MLB home run. If you want every notification for every home run, do that. I know they had a steals one. I don't know if that one's working, but they do that as well. But yeah, I mean, they're specific into like what we'll actually talk about when we pay attention to in small samples for stats and things like that. But early in the year, it's like you get a sense of like who's playing, lineup construction. Like, you know, I know we do that, and I know Mike Curlin does that for The Athletic and does a lot of like spring training lineup breakdown, but a lot of that is just teams sort of testing it and seeing what works and throwing stuff against the wall and hoping it sticks. Like, once it's the regular season, like, you're going to, like, teams show their hands. Like, this is it. So you get a sense of what's actually going to happen. I know we'll get into some specifics that we're going to be looking at as far as, like, lineups, position battles, things like that. But you need to just be hypersensitive basically this first weekend, really. Like, you'll absorb so much more information, and then it's kind of set. Like, right? Like, it happens so quickly. Like, basically the second week of April, like, you get into the grind and like you're used to the regular season and it's all mm-hmm. systems go. But the first 10 days or so, it's kind of like new and amorphous.
Surprise. Yeah. Surprise season.
And it's only going to be like that. And you're only going to have that advantage of it being new and not everyone knowing what to expect from every single team for like a week and a half. So you just have to be hypersensitive. And I think those things that you hit on were perfect for what to look out for, so, and what to use.
So shifting from that, so we're hypersensitive, we're getting these alerts, and then you have the tough decision because you drafted most of these guys, mm-hmm. and yeah, there might be one or two that you're like, oh, I can't wait to get rid of him. You know, he's injured or it's shaken out to where he's not getting playing time. But it's also the season of very tough decisions because you have to balance being aggressive without overreacting. So for every Taylor Ward, there's also an Owen Miller. Mm-hmm. And I think this is something that we come up against every year. So I know there's not like a silver bullet on that advice, but how do you go about that, Steve, trying to find the balance of being aggressive without overreacting?
I think it's hard to not necessarily ride a hot wave. And I don't think it was bad to roster Owen Miller for the first 2 weeks of the last season, but
you got some production.
Some production, but I think as you get more of a plate of sample size, those things will come to fruition and you'll figure out one or the other that, okay, Taylor Ward is actually good and is a breakout and Owen Miller had a hot start and the league figured him out. A lot of times it's hard to do this, but you'll figure it out when the player has that first slump. It's like, okay, do they adjust back? Taylor Ward adjusted back and, you know, had a strong showing until he was hurt. Owen Miller, when the league adjusted, did not. So you kind of have to hold them to that through that slump. I mean, some of it's luck, right? Like, you could be first to the waiver wire and have your choice of Taylor Ward, Owen Miller. You could add both and see who is actually real and hold on to a guy for a certain sample. But you might just be a split second late and had to add Owen Miller, and you're kind of, you know, out of luck once his run out. So I think if you understand that, though, if you know that this could go wrong quickly or it could just be something that fades out, you're going to be aware and not just hold on to someone, or, you know, be patient if you saw something. You know, when we get to a stabilization point of like 50 batted balls, like, right, to see if there's an actual change. I think that there's also things to look out for. Like, you'll be able to fit a narrative into something that's real as opposed to just a hot start like Miller's was last year.
Exactly.
There's signal throughout the noise, right? Like, there's actually meaningful stuff that you could figure out over a longer period of time. You just have to be able to, like, you have to jump on Taylor Ward quickly to be able to even find out. So that's why I think it's important to be hypersensitive and more aggressive than usual. I'm not saying drop your 8th round pick for this year's Taylor Ward. It's, you know, drop the guy that you drafted in the 18th round and then wait and see.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. And like, to do that with some confidence, again, it's a little bit of rudimentary advice, but don't just take the stat line and run with it. I mean, if you're assessing the guy, you know, we're at the luxury of oversaturation of fantasy experts, to be totally honest. So like, you can go out to Twitter and just search you know, Owen Miller, see if there was a swing change, see if he went to driveline in the offseason, see if, you know, he had a hot spring training. Like, we're now quickly moving into the era where the data starts to get overwhelming. It's already happening. You know, for months and months through February, mid-March, it's like, yeah, we already know all this. And now we're getting to a point where, you know, we're almost getting all these data inputs faster than you can process them. So you kind of have to reverse engineer that and say like, oh, I'm interested in this guy. Let me go see what the narrative is, like you mentioned. And you can do some of that on your own, you know, going to Baseball Savant and checking, you know, Velo or, you know, Max EV. We'll talk about some of those things that we like to look at. But the nice part is a lot of people already have that data out there. So I think, you know, it's like you said, Steve, 18th round, maybe even 15th, 16th round. Like, my personal view is anything after like pick 250, it's a dart throw. So if you're seeing somebody else who's enticing, who's on a hot streak, I would rather try to follow that and see what it is, because every year the first 2 weeks of the season ends up with a guy that's, I don't want to say a league winner, but definitely a team changer. And that's something you don't want to, you know, wake up in the third week of April and be like, oh, I didn't have one impact ad in the first couple weeks of the season. So that's kind of my two cents on that. But it leads to, for people who are on NFBC, FAB discussions, because FAB is where you kind of put your money where your mouth is on that a little bit, because you have to set wagers and everything. So, you know, I know there's entire shows dedicated to this. On the Wire is great, of course, every Sunday, again, on the Pitcherless Podcast Network. But for your kind of summary, Steve, on how you approach FAB early in the season, talk to us about, like, you know, do you have a budget in mind? Does it all depend on the player? How much are you willing to kind of splurge in this first like week or two, you know, knowing that there's another 20 weeks after that, but these are the impact moments, right?
I don't have a budget. I don't think it's smart to set, okay, I'm going to spend X. I don't think it's ever good to set yourself to a limit any week, because it's all context and team dependent, right? Like I said, I am more aggressive in the beginning of the season. It's not set in stone, but it really, and you don't need to do it, but it really, really helps you. If you're going to win your league, you probably need to have an ad that happened in April that changed your season for the better. Like, that just, you know, if you want to make a checklist of, like, things that you need to do every year to win your fantasy league, you know, it's like, yeah,
draft. Healthy first-round pick.
Yeah, healthy, yeah. First-round pick, draft well, you know, have a late-round closer that, you know, ends up with a job, and then, like, have an impact ad in April, at least one, right? Because then you get that 6 months of production. You know, it's something that you don't necessarily have to acquire in the trade where you're giving up much. Like, you know, I don't have the numbers on this, but, you know, 7 out of 10 fantasy managers say they add, you know, an impact bat or arm in April to help them win their league. And again, it's not something that you absolutely have to do, but it's definitely, like, you know, a common threat theme among winning teams. So with that being said, I definitely am more aggressive, and then it's just team dependent. Like, for a real life example, yes, I know no one cares about your fantasy team, but in the On the Wire league, it's a NFBC style weekly mimic of, you know, TGFBI main event, you know, 30 man rosters, weekly moves. I had Jose Altuve, who, you know, I drafted this team in late January, early February, whatever it was. So Anthony Volpe was still a free agent. And I spent about 35% of my budget on him. Would I have done that had I not had Jose Altuve? No, because I would have been set, or had Altuve not been injured, or if I had, you know, Marcus Semien at second base, I would not have spent that much of my budget. But for that specific team, the need is there. And I'll figure out my fab later on, but I needed the impact middle infielder to fill that massive hole in my lineup, or else I'm, you know, not going to compete. Sure, Volpe's still a risk, and he might not be great, but I need to take that chance with my, third round pick out for 2.5 months?
Yeah, so it's team dependent.
It's team, that's why you can't.
How much you have a need.
Right. You can't say, oh, I only wanted to spend $100 the first weekend max, so therefore I can't get all Volpe when he's sitting out there on the wire and I have a whole injured Jose Altuve. Like, you can't do that. You need to assess your situation, and each one is differently. You shouldn't put a number on one way or the other. Sure, yes, you can be more conservative and want to wait it out and then therefore have the hammer and an edge up over certain teams later in the year. You can still do that, but you need to be more aggressive to fill your holes, or else you're going to be starting behind the eight ball.
Dude, no one cares about your fantasy team or that you got Volpe, Steve.
It's my only share, so I had to share it.
No, I'm kidding. That's, I mean, Volpe's exciting one. And you had your home league draft, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean, normally we get into this stuff. It's opening day, so we're trying to keep it high and tight. But yeah, that's a big get there. I think it's well worth the fab spent. Something else we were talking about before we started rolling on this was, and you brought up, it's a great point. If you do have dead weight on your roster and you're putting in fab bids, you absolutely have to find a way to get rid of that player.
Make,
so do not stop.
Make your condition bids like 50 players long. It does not matter. That happened to me so many times last year. I've been better with it, but like, make sure you're dropping a guy that, especially for leagues that drafted earlier, like, right? Like, I was thinking to myself too, like, I know we like to do best balls like in January, February. That's kind of like best ball season, but like, isn't it so much smarter to probably do best balls like now when rosters are set, so you can like know?
Yeah, dude, I hate my best ball.
Right? Right? There's so many decisions that have happened that's like, why would I have drafted this guy if I know he's going to start in double A or something? Whatever. That's a tangent. But yes, make sure you're dropping the guys that you want to drop and that just aren't going to play, or else you're going to be stuck with dead weight roster for a whole week. Yes, I know that you could probably shove them on the bench, but those seven bench spots in standard NFPC leagues get tight quickly.
And you want to use them for speculative closings or something.
Exactly.
There's a million reasons. Yeah.
Exactly.
So the last question on the approach is related to the underperformers. Thinking of the Brian Dozier, the Travis Shaw of years past, that like, it is an investment. You know, it is ninth round, 10th round. What's the prescription on how long you hold out on those guys? I once heard something that was like, start at the back of your draft of like a 20-team league, add a week on for each round. And it's like, that's kind of a formula, but like, how do you approach that? Because it's such a headache.
I think that's a good rule of thumb. I think that's a really good rule of thumb. Like, the name that comes to mind is Marcus Semien of last year, right? Like, you know, he was probably, a fourth or fifth round player, and he picked it up around, like, Memorial Day. So that was, like, 8 weeks into the season, 9 weeks, 10 weeks. So, like, it was pretty bleak.
A player
it was
like
pretty
bleak.
Yeah, you got to let the big names tank you if it's going to, you know, like, it's going to turn around for the really, really big names. So you have to be really patient with those guys. But, yeah, as you get towards the end round, it's kind of churn and burn. That's where you need to be aggressive with the guys that are Taylor Ward and Owen Miller. And hey, if they're Owen Miller in 2 weeks and they stop hitting, like, you just move on, try and find the next one, or just, you know, use that as a streamer spot.
Yeah, and I know it's got, you know, each situation should be managed in its own right, but just to play the game a little bit, Steve, like, I feel, you know, just looking at ADP, I kind of feel like pick 220, like anything after pick 220, I'm pretty much on like a 2 week max on if you're terrible. So if Jesse Winker is like 1 for 24, I'm not waiting that long. And we liked Winker in the offseason.
Yes.
But when you get above pick 220 and you're starting to get into the world of like, you know, John Gray, Oscar Gonzalez, Tristan Casas. Like, these are guys I might give a little bit more time to. And I know it's like an arbitrary endpoint there, but I don't know. There is kind of a breaking point of like investment where I'm not going to be dropping in the first week or two somebody like a Joey Meneses if he's like batting 100. And Meneses has an ADP of 183. So like, to me, I really think once you get to that tier is when I kind of say all bets are off. It's what have you done for me lately a little bit. But would you agree with that? Or do you think that it's not that simple?
No, I think it's a good rule of thumb. I just also think that you have to balance those sort of set in stone rules with flexibility, depending on your need and
depth of the league.
Yeah, depth of the league, what you want to do,
right.
Who's out there, your specific needs, are there other ways to solve your roster issues, things like that. But yeah, I think it's generally a fine rule of thumb.
Okay. So that was some high level on approach, and we are going to get into the things we're watching for next.
Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but the problem is managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight today and in the future. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Start taking control of your weight management and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today. When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat, and that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
So, Steve, first and foremost, going into opening weekend, I think what jumps out the most is lineups. You kind of alluded to it. You know, we've all looked at roster resource. We have a instinct. There's reports that come out from the managers about who's going to win a position. But really, it's like rubber meets the road once the games actually start. Like, there's no hiding, even for the sneakiest of managers. There's no hiding from the actual lineup card. So talk about just kind of what things you're looking for as it relates to lineups. And if you want to jump into any examples, we can do that too.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing to look for. I think it's it's telling if you're going to see platoons, if they're batting a lefty when they're facing tough lefties, where people bat in the batting order. Like, I think it's just, especially for good lineups, right? Like, if you don't necessarily know, like for the Yankees, right? Like DJ LeMahieu, like, is he going to stick at the top of the Yankees order all season long and like sort of have a renaissance DJ LeMahieu season and stick up there? Because that would certainly change his value for kind of from where it's fallen a little bit over the last year and a half or so. So things like that, I think, are important to keep an eye on, and you get a pretty big clean picture like right away. Like, yes, teams change their lineup, but there's certainly a general structure to them. And then especially for the guys that we care about, like the stud fantasy players, like, they're you're going to find out their spot like quickly, especially for like the good teams. Like for the Cardinals, like you have down here is a is one that's really interesting. Like, they're trying to find a leadoff hitter. Like, you know, is Tyler O'Neill going to be in the two hole? Is it going to be, you know, like Nootbaar or, you know, Brendan Donovan or whoever else? Like, right? It's just it's things like
Walker
that. Jordan,
doing,
yeah,
dude.
Exactly. Where are they going to play?
I know
play
I'm biased,
Walker,
man,
right?
But I think the Cardinals has like five of the top 10 stories.
I'm biased too. I have four Cardinals on my home league team, so I'm a Cardinal fan with you too this year, man. I am absolutely pulling for the Redbirds. I'm all aboard the train.
Rattle them off. I mean, so you got Donovan and Nootbaar.
Oh yeah, and then Goldie and Contreras. Yeah.
Holy smokes, man! So you might have four of the top five of the lineup, dude. Yeah. That's. We'll see if I can match it. My home league's absurd because Central Illinois. We got half Cubs, half Cardinals, and it's. I mean, Jordan Walker in my home league. There, you know, I know Yahoo doesn't do it, but. We're going to set the min pick tomorrow night here in Peoria, Illinois. Like, someone will grab him in the fourth or fifth round. It's just
I love it.
Insane. My uncles don't care about the rest of the landscape. So
I love it.
Yeah, that's the Cardinals, like you mentioned, the order, but also, like, crowded rosters, mm-hmm. right? So I think just figuring out how do they juggle, you know, is Carlson playing every other day? Mm-hmm. If so, that's not great for Gorman, Jordan Walker, Donovan, like, you know, we'll get the answer to a lot of those questions. I think the Dodgers are an interesting one to watch because we've always known that that's a lineup we want exposure to. And it's like, you know, you got Miguel Rojas and Vargas and, like, you know, are they going to continue to have Chris Taylor be mixed in and kind of rotating that? James Outman is another one that I think we have a lot of interest in, but it's just like, you know, what kind of opportunity is he going to get? Trace Thompson. So those are the ones that kind of, you know, they get solved after about a week. You're like, okay, I think I got a shape of what this lineup mix and match is going to be. But you brought up platoons, Steve, and I think that's a good one because some of the platoon bats, and this might be more for 12-team, 14-team leagues, not really like the deep industry, NFBC, things like that, but some of these guys who are platoon guys tend to be fringe on roster if they're rostered or not. So, you know, a guy like Oscar Colas, supposed to be platooning, you know, against left-handed pitchers. But on opening day, Colas faces or would face a left-handed pitcher. So will the White Sox start Colas on opening day? Something I'm watching. You know, Josh Naylor's rostered up, but on Friday he faces a lefty. I think something we were looking at, which we'll talk about a little bit later, is Matt Carpenter and Nelson Cruz with the Padres, where Carp is supposed to sit versus the lefties. The Padres face a lefty Friday and Saturday. So two of their first three games, I think we'll see as, like, is that just a hard and fast platoon there? Or are they going to let Carp have a shot because he was Lou Gehrig last year? you know, that those are really things that I'm interested in. I mean, we've got some other, like, platoon guys that aren't getting tested as much in this opening weekend, but just guys in general who are set to platoon who might be way more valuable fantasy-wise if they break out of that platoon role, which would be Jesse Winker, Yoshida, Tristan Casas, Massey, Ryan Noda, Jared Kelnick, Garrett Mitchell as well. The Brewers outfield is very, very interesting to watch. So those are some names, Michael Conforto, that if they're, you know, getting opportunity to face both-handed pitchers, then they quickly could move from, like, waiver wire fringe guys to must roster in a way.
Yeah, because at this point, like, you know, all these signing happens and transactions happens and guys set their roster, and we're kind of just assuming, oh, this is a lefty platoon, this is a strong side platoon, this is a weak side platoon, like, this is where it just fits as, like, what coaches say and sort of what they're trying out in spring training. And then this is kind of what we're talking about. It's like you really find out what they are these first few games, right? Like, if, if, you know, Jesse Winker is truly signed there to be their everyday outfielder versus lefties and rights, and they want to give them a full shot and not just speculation on whether it's a platoon or just, you know, because I think he has upside, or whoever else thinks he has upside, maybe he could get a shot. Like, we're going to find out in short order what that is. And you really only have – that's why these weeks are important. Like, this is the real life example of why it is important to be hypersensitive, because this is the only week really where that's going to be the case, where we find out these guys' true roles. So, I think it's a great point and all great names to pay attention to.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that we have to pay attention to early on is the closer situations. Yep. And this is something I've been historically bad at, Steve. And I know it doesn't pair well with my don't pay for saves strategy. I've changed that a little bit.
Don't pay for saves, but I'm also horrible at picking up early saves.
It's basically a punt strategy, but I'm trying to correct my ways. I think you've had a little more success on, you know, being quick to the draw on closer battles. What are some closer situations that you're watching closely in the first week or so?
Yeah, I've also been not ashamed to like roster like bad closers, which sometimes isn't a great investment. Like, you get guys that are on these bad teams that don't get many chances and just aren't that good. So
On MLB TV. Yeah, that's bad for your mental health.
It's bad watching anytime you're having a closer try to save out a game. It's not healthy at all, but let alone one that doesn't have the greatest skills. Like, you know, I don't know. I feel like I watched like Anthony Bender load the bases like 5 times in a save situation last year before he was put on the IL. But whatever. Can't wait to do it again this season. A few that come to mind. I mean, the first one is Arizona. I think it's a really interesting bullpen. And Scott McHugh is the first guy that I think is going to get a chance. He closed in Japan for the last 3 years, and actually got a save on Monday night in like their exhibition game in like an actual save situation in the ninth inning. So looks like he's going to get the first chance there. Another guy that came to mind, it was because of an Eno Saris tweet. Have to mention that at least once an episode. Carlos Vargas made the team, is a good reliever, has the same stuff plus as Nate Pearson this spring, and is just an interesting guy to keep an eye on. He might not get saves right away, but is super talented and like a legit actual relief prospect. And then Rick Graham, when I posted that Eno Saris tweet, Rick Graham of In the Pen and the head bullpen guy, the closer of the pitcherless bullpen, Rick Graham, the leader of our committee, put out another name in the Discord, Justin Martinez, who is a prospect but should be up at some point this year for the Diamondbacks and is another good reliever with good stuff. So, you know, it's always interesting on bad teams like that, or teams that we think could be bad, there is opportunity to run with it. So those are just a few guys that I'm watching in the Arizona bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, some other situations to watch closely. I mean, some of these guys might be rostered, but the Dodgers, obviously, Evan Phillips has been your guy all offseason, yep. Steve. I got a couple shares because of that. He's got the stuff. And then Brewstar Graterol is, I believe he's been reported to kind of be the fireman, where or they might kind of shuffle around eighth inning.
I think they said the exact quote last week was Evan Phillips is going to be used in our toughest situations. And I think people are running with that as the fireman, and then it's just been kind of like assumed that Graterol is the closer. I just don't buy it. I just don't think Graterol is nearly as good. Evan Phillips has a 33% strikeout rate. Graterol the last 2 years has an 18% strikeout rate and a 21% strikeout rate. I know Graterol has the ground balls, but he just does not have the strikeout rate to be a closer. I am betting on Evan Phillips. I have bet on Evan Phillips in my draft. I just think he is going to be the closer for this Dodgers team. I know Graterol has the fastball. He has the nickname, the elite stuff, but he just has not translated that into a K rate of a closer. So I really think that Phillips is just going to run with it. That's just my weekly, I guess, stand for Evan Phillips to be the closer of the Dodgers.
Yeah. Hey, I don't blame you. It's one to watch, and again, in leagues where those guys aren't rostered, of course, you want to be watching it very closely based on
roster both of them if you can, right? Like, they're both pitchers with a lot of skill. Like, Phillips, at the very least, will help you in Ks and ratios, and if you can afford it, if someone emerges in the first week, you just drop the next one. who knows, it might be more complicated than that, be more of a committee, and you kind of have to decide there, but you'll at least cover the bases on
if one,
yeah, for emerge. One of yeah. the best teams in baseball, right?
Yep. And then not one of the best teams in baseball, the Cubs. You've got Brad Boxberger and Michael Fulmer, who are both kind of fighting mm-hmm. for that closer role. I think it might be a closer by committee, but again, these are kind of the early weeks where we can find out if there is a trend of somebody, you know, basically being the hot hand for a manager to ride. So that's another situation to watch. And then in Miami, I think AJ Puck and Dylan Floro are both in contention there as well. So again, just some names to be watching. And, you know, if one of them struggles or has a blown save, that sometimes can be the preemptive fab bid where you mm-hmm. can get a guy for, you know, 10 out of $1,000 rather than like 100 before they actually announce that, you know, somebody's going to get a shot at being the new closer.
Yeah, that's another thing. You could save yourself some bucks in fab. I remember last year, I think I added David Robertson around maybe even before opening day or very shortly thereafter, like week one before he got a few saves. Just because it looked like, based on usage and stuff, that he was going to be the closer in Chicago and eventually ran with that. And, you know, also with teams like the Cubs or even Miami, Arizona too, they might want to set a set closer because then at the deadline it's easier to trade a guy who has, you know, 25 saves or whatever. Kind of what they did with Robertson last year with going to Philly. So sometimes teams that are, you know, in the bottom half do like to have that closer to sort of amp up their trade value.
Yep. Yeah, and then moving to starting pitchers, I think just broadly things that we want to watch for outside of obviously, you know, guys making the rotation would be when they're actually throwing, you know, be watching certain things like innings per start. That can be a good indicator of, you know, you're looking for volume. These days, 180 innings is pretty much what 200 innings used to be. So if a guy who you thought was going to be on a bit of a limit gets a 7-inning outing or a 6-inning outing, that gets my attention personally. And then, you know, don't wait until the next day to kind of see what pitchers that night are doing. You can obviously filter almost any app on, you know, today's stats, look at strikeouts, look at who might be, you know, having good surface level results, but then also the underlying stuff where you can go to Baseball Savant, click on the game feed, and right away you see top exit velocity, top pitch velocity, swings and misses. I know on Pitcher List as well, there's a lot of really good tools that you can go out and look at Nick Pollock's game recaps mm-hmm. when those are available, where he kind of assesses each pitcher's each starting pitcher's outing.
Every single pitcher's outing is written up and recapped by Nick. So yeah, add that to your to your daily routine. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the that's the morning over coffee activity right there mm-hmm. with your you can do it while you're listening to First Pitch. So there you go. But those are things. I mean, we're always looking for velo jumps. We're always looking for pitch mix changers. And again, if you see guys that are interesting, go out and search the name on Twitter. See if there's more than meets the eye from the box score. So those are some high level notes, again, on kind of what we're looking for. And then I think the last thing to note, Steve, is just having said what we said about underperforming guys and needing to give them some patience throughout the month of April, I think there's definitely an opportunity to pounce when people mm-hmm. kind of cut bait too soon. So, you know, I think this happens less in industry leagues because most people kind of get that you don't want to drop mm-hmm. a, you know, 10th round guy. But certainly in your home leagues or public leagues, I think there's as much of an opportunity to basically go through the rummage bin and be like, oh, man, I can't believe that guy dropped Reed Detmers after he got blown up on his first outing. So, you know, I don't know if there's that much to add to that, but I think that's one more way that you can get an edge is kind of picking up the guy who's slumping.
Pay attention to who is dropped. Like if there's a sleeper or a starter that you like that, you know, if I don't draft a guy and it's a pitcher I like, there's nothing I like more than when he gets rocked in the first week because there's a chance that someone else drops him and then I could add him. Right. Like there's nothing more that I, that you know, you don't root for anyone to do poorly, but it's just something that, you know, it's like, oh, like that was a tough one. Like, are you going to be on this person's roster tomorrow? Because I'm still very interested in you. Just sort of that mentality. So just pay attention to who's dropped. And it might not be done in NFBC or industry leagues, things like that, but it isn't like there isn't like a transactions page, like, right? Like at the bottom of your like Yahoo or Fantrax or ESPN league, like there is. So for NFBC leagues, like just go to the transaction and just browse who was dropped. The transaction section. Yeah. Look at ownership. Look at who was there. Last week, you know, you could see the actual transactions and who was dropped on that one drop down tab. I know it's not the most intuitive, but it's there. So it's definitely something that you should look at.
Yeah, it is a good point, though, because I think we all go to the transaction trend type of look. And it's like, yeah, who's been added the most? Yeah. Well, you know, Chris Sale isn't going to show up on that list because he's not getting dropped in league. So it's like you also need to look at ownership percentage or just, you know, scour the transaction list if your league has that. But all things that are important to watch for. So lineups, position battles, platoons, or people breaking out of platoons, the closer picture, the starting pitchers and kind of their under the hood stats. And then, you know, obviously any guys that were released too soon. So those are some things that we're watching for early on, and we're going to get to players we're watching for next.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today. Sometimes it can feel like food has an emotional control over you. Well, it's time to show your food who's boss with Noom. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Start taking control of your weight management and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Which, Steve, that does transition us to kind of a long list of players here. So, I mean, opening up the floor, do you have a certain area or a certain guy that you've definitely got circled as, like, you know, basically right on the fringe and you're like, I want to keep a close eye on what this guy does early on?
There's not anyone specifically. I mean, there's a bunch of names here, and I think it's sort of, you know, just becomes apparent, but there's definitely, I think, a good watch list, and this is sort of what I was talking about in my long-winded, horrible explanation of the show. Like, hopefully, Inception, the Inception to help your fantasy baseball team. But, you know, this is ideally a watch list that, like, if you just have this on, you know, if you're looking out for this player X and they do well, like, okay, it piques my interest. But I think there's some really good names here that I'm excited to get into.
Well, we've got them bucketed in a few different categories. So the first one, which again is kind of arbitrary, but the infield roles. So guys who are new to being a starting infielder and have kind of that positional eligibility. And I think The first one, which we have talked about all offseason, Steve, so I've got a little bit of a personal attachment to Eli Harris Montero with the Rockies. And a big part of this was not only that Montero is playing half his games in Coors, but he's got pop, and what he does not have is plate discipline until this spring training, where he really cut down on the strikeouts, and that's what got our attention over a month ago. Then they signed Mike Moustakas. We think the Rockies are going to Rocky, and now we hear that Montero should be the starting third baseman. So this is a prime example of a guy who, you know, in terms of where he's going, it's, you know, he's outside of the top 500 in leagues. So this is a name that should be available in some NFBC leagues, definitely in your public league leagues or your home leagues. And, you know, playing in Coors with the type of pop that he has, and if the plate discipline has been corrected or improved, this could be a big, big value. Right now he's slated to hit seventh, and he's at that third base position, which is very scarce. He's only 24 years old. And yeah, Montero is one that among the list of names is kind of highest up for me, because we saw last year in AAA, he had 15 homers in 65 games. You know, that prorates out to like a 40 homer pace. It's just the K rate when he was up in the majors last year was 33%. And now in the preseason, it's been, you know, sub 15%, I believe. So it's like, this is one that I'm definitely watching.
That's something that is sticky, that actually means something from spring training as far as like K rates, that actually translates well. And I mean, he showed some power too in the big leagues. He had 6 home runs in 53 games too. And anytime that there's a chance for a Colorado Rocky hitter to sort of pop up and be relevant, it grabs my attention. So yes, I think that is a great one to open up with. And I think it's a great call. And you know, if he does get more playing time than expected, and looking like he might, like that alone is something to be, you know, keep an eye on and put on your watch list for sure.
Yeah. And it was actually a 20% strikeout rate, but he did have 5 home runs in 20.
But that's,
spring,
that's,
spring
that's
training.
Certain, like if it's 20%, like that's, you know, you're all systems go there. Like, right. Like we wanted to get like under 30.
Yep.
So 20%, like, yeah, absolutely. You're in for that rate.
Yep. So that's the definition of a watch list guy for us. Next one is David Hensley, Steve. I know that, you know, this opportunity sprung up from the Jose Altuve situation, but got to be honest, I haven't really dug in that much on Hensley. Not sure if you've been close to this, but to me, it's like cheap exposure to the Astros lineup. He's hitting in the 6th slot, which should give a lot of RBI opportunity with Alvarez, Abreu, Bregman in front of him. But not sure I've done kind of the deep dive on the player himself.
So at the very least, it's cheap exposure to the Astros lineup. In, you know, an 80th, 90th percentile outcome, like this might be a good player on the Astros lineup. Like at Triple A last year in 104 games, he had 10 homers, 20 steals, so you love to see that. Doesn't strike out that much, always has a K rate around 22%, at a 17.2% walk rate at Triple A last year.
Whoa.
So knows how to take a walk. You know, his walk rate always has been around basically 10% at least throughout all his stops in the minors.
So this guy's an OBP guy.
Some plate skills there. He's 6'6", 190, so like a really big guy that's really strange for a second baseman. So definitely intriguing.
He's stealing all these bags.
Like if you have Altuve in a deeper league, like this should be your stopgap, right? Like at least the first shot stopgap. Like it should be exposure to the Astros lineup. This guy could be good. There could be some speed. In an OBP league, you know, I would absolutely in a deeper OBP league be looking to add him. So definitely a good and intriguing name. And you know, the Astros are a player development haven, right? Like that's sort of what they do. Like Jeremy Pena, you know, seamlessly replaces Carlos Correa. Like you know, they're good at building baseball players and developing baseball players. So I am definitely interested in David Hensley.
Yeah, and he's played around the infield. He's DH, second base, third base, shortstop. But he did have an appearance left in the outfield last year. Mm-hmm. So that kind of has my attention to where maybe this isn't just a rental if, like,
Brantley has a setback.
Chaz McCormick, an injury or, you know, the Astros outfield with Beyond Tucker, Chaz McCormick, and Jake Meyers.
There's some weak spots of entry in the Astros lineup. And I think that's a good segue by not your normal host, but for me with Yiner Diaz, who just got announced that he made the Astros and as the backup catcher. And, you know, he's a decent prospect. I think he's their number three prospect and is interesting. I think it's another name to watch. Like Martin Maldonado is still the catcher there. I know he's a good fielder, but he's like 36 year old and is basically an automatic out at the plate at this point. So if Yiner Diaz does anything with the bat, it could be interesting. Last year, AAA had 16 homers and 201 at bats, had a 17.8% strikeout rate, just a 6% walk rate. But I mean, that was a 930 OPS and a 121 WRC plus. Has put up pretty good numbers with the stick basically throughout his whole minor league career. So he also popped 9 more homers in 57 games at Double A last year. So 25 homers total in about, you know, 110 games last year. So really, really interesting. And cool that he made the team. Definitely someone to keep a watch list on if you're looking for a second catcher or, you know, maybe someone that could steal the role for the Astros.
Yeah, and he was fifth in the spring training for at-bats. Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to see what he got,
Yeah, and he hit .325 with an .892 OPS. So yeah, that's a good watch list one for sure, Steve. So I like that. Nice segue.
Thank you. Learn from the best. What you're doing. Learn from the best.
Yeah. Well, you put me on the spot here. I have no segue to get to Derek Hall. Maybe injury. Another injury guy. So yeah, with the unfortunate news on Rhys Hoskins, I know this is kind of 2 week old news, but Derek Hall is a name that is going to be kind of cheap pop, another one that is set to platoon, but maybe not. He is also set to hit cleanup for the Phillies. And Hall came up last year and had a pretty loud sample size with just 42 games and hit 9 home runs. So that's the .272 ISO is very impressive there. He has some plate discipline issues as well. So be watching the K rate there. But I think Derek Hall is a really good one to watch in kind of this opening weekend. I mean, if you remember, it's kind of not that different from when Rhys Hoskins came up and he was just hitting home runs like seemingly every plate appearance. But right now, Hall is just 20% rostered in Yahoo leagues. He's not a spring hen. He's 27 years old. So I think that they're probably viewing this as, you know, a prove yourself moment for Hall. And yeah, I think this is a good one to watch. I mean, in terms of splits, he really has struggled against lefties, so that's something to watch. Mm-hmm. But you could see him kind of being that like Jock Peterson type, where maybe he still delivers value because you're getting his best plate appearances. So that's Derek Hall, which is another good one. Steve, Nolan Gorman, I know is a Cardinal. He's set to be the DH at least starting out, but some interesting stuff that we were talking about earlier, if you want to talk through some of that behind-the-scenes interest in Nolan Gorman this offseason.
Yeah, shout-out to Dan Weber, a listener who gave a shout, asked us to talk about him on the pod, and I think it's a great fitting sort of watch list. He sent over a tweet from Brendan Tuma, who actually works for Underdog Fantasy, does a lot of their good stuff over there. He said that Nolan Gorman made an adjustment to counter the high fastballs that, you know, gave him a ton of issues last year. He's having an amazing spring. Nobody's talking about it. He's second base eligible in leagues and waivers. It makes sense to roster him initially and just drop him if it doesn't work out. So exactly sort of what we're talking about, like a shallow position, guy that has a lot of skills, good pop, made a adjustment, a swing change, whatever have you, to adjust to the high fastballs that gave him trouble. And, you know, you basically just have to hope and see and wait to see if it works out. Like, Gorman is the perfect example to give it a ride, because if he does come out and have five homers over the weekend, like, it's going to be a bidding war to get him on that first Sunday, right? So add him now and then see where we're at, come a week and a half from now.
Yeah. Yeah, and Gorman, I mean, in spring training, he did have four home runs, a 9.11 OPS, which is exciting, but I do a little cold water. He did have a strikeout rate over 30%, so we'll see if some of that changed. It kind of reminds me, though, another point is the old Jonah Heim use case, where even if a guy you're interested in has had some, you know, a couple 0-for-4 games, and you're like, man, I was really hoping to see a breakout for Gorman. Something that we like to do is go to, if you go to their Baseball Savant page and go to the game log, usually after the day after the game, it'll actually upload the video of each of their at-bats. So that's where I think it was with Heim that we saw when he was going on a homer binge, he had like four or five outs in that streak where he hit five home runs in six games or something. During that time, he had four or five outs that were at the warning track. And so that just hits a little different than like grounding into a double play. So that's another kind of sneaky tactic. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested in Gorman. I know they optioned Yepes, which kind of frees up a little bit of elbow room for some of those guys. But I'm somewhat skeptical until I see kind of the strikeout rate to really be buying in on Gorman, at least at the moment. Obviously, he's got a lot of development ahead. So those are some infield guys there that we wanted to start with. And then shifting to outfield, which, you know, this year, name of the game is that outfield is thin, looking for any help that we can get. And the Brewers are one of those lineups that we're going to be watching closely. Garrett Mitchell is set to, he's supposed to be starting and also hitting seventh in that lineup, possibly platooning. But another name, and I got to give a shout out to Scott White over at CBS, who talked about how Joey Weimer is another guy who made their roster. And Weimer has some very interesting minor league stats, power speed combo. And if this guy can break through, it's very interesting. 70 grade raw power, 70 grade speed. And last year across AA and AAA had 21 homers and 31 steals. And that's with hitting a respectable batting average of like 270. So this is, this is one that's got my attention. I don't know. I put in a kind of a provisional bid on NFBC because we don't know what the playing time is going to look like yet. But he's a prime example of like, watch the lineups, add the guy to your watch list, and if they start, you know, whether there's an injury or they just start giving him some opportunity there, he could run with the job. So I know Sal Frelick is on the way for the Brewers as well, but they need all the help they can get with that outfield with Brian Anderson and Garrett Mitchell alongside Christian Yelich there. So
quick note, Joey Weimer was sent down to minor league camp on Monday. He lost out on the last roster spot to no one else other than Owen Miller.
Oh, man. So we just need to delete that segment, I guess.
No. I think it's still a good watch list candidate. Like, he probably, you know, being the last cut, I think he would get the first shot over someone like Frelick, who I think might be a little bit further away. Weimer seems like he's a little bit closer. So definitely still watch list worthy for sure, I think.
So who got the spot over him?
Owen Miller.
Oh, my God, man. Are you kidding me? Okay, well, I don't know. I guess Owen Miller might need to be on the watch list.
No.
Any other outfielders you want to hit on, Steve, that you're watching for in the first week or so?
Blake Sable. He was a Rule 5 pick from the Pirates. Shocking. They got absolutely devastated in the Rule 5 draft. By the Giants, and it was announced that he made the opening day roster and is going to play some outfield. He should be catcher eligible in most leagues. He is going to play some catcher as well, but it looks like he is going to play in the outfield for the most part. 19 homers, 10 steals across two levels, Double A and Triple A last year. Had a 157 WRC plus in 25 Triple A games, 124 WRC plus in 98 Double A games for the Pirates organization last year, and it's looked like he's going to get a real shot by the Giants. So definitely someone that I am keeping an eye on. And I did see his name in a few fab spots this weekend when it was announced that he made the Giants. So I'm interested in Blake Sable, and he will be on my watch list. I'm adding him to my home league watch list right now.
Yeah, that's a great one. I mean, he carries the C even in NFBC league. So it's a really good one. He might be putting our boy Eric Haas out of a job, Steve, as kind of this bargain catcher outfielder. So, yeah, I think that's a good one. He's another one that the projections just don't quite match what he's done to date. So he's been, over the past couple of years, batting average has been well above like 280 most of the time, and his projections have him hitting like 230. So maybe that's part of what's keeping his helium down, is just kind of lukewarm projections. But yeah, I think that's, you know, one of those cheat code catcher moves that we're always a fan of, you know, going back to Kiner Falefa and all those. Anytime you can get the volume at catcher with somebody who's not a negative is a huge plus. So that, I think that's a great name. Okay, well, let's move to, I mean, a couple other names, Steve, aging guys, whether we're watching them for better or worse, but Eduardo Escobar is kind of in the role for the Mets and unfortunately blocking Brett Beatty. But I think we're watching that kind of for the opposite reasons, to see if Escobar struggles early on. I mean, he's 34 years old. Beatty is clearly, you know, the third baseman of the future for the Mets. So I think that's more like a stash play. But if he is struggling, I'd rather get out in front of that with a cheaper bid than basically be caught in the bidding war, like you were saying. So I think that's another one that, I don't know if you got anything to add, but obviously Beatty is a blue chip prospect that should be on everyone's rosters the second he gets called up. So
yeah, I think that's a great call.
Yeah. And then you had Nelson Cruz, Steve. I had Matt Carpenter. I mean, what are your thoughts on Cruz? I feel like Carp is probably going to get a majority of the at-bats with the being on the better side of the platoon. But what's grabbing you with Cruz?
So this actually came about because of a Rob Silver tweet. He just put out a tweet, a player who isn't drafted in any of my drafts this weekend, but will be on my fantasy team, be on every team in 2 weeks. And that's Nelson Cruz. And I saw our boy, former guest of the pod, Alex Chamberlain, who loves, Nelson Cruz, endorse it. So it's just interesting. And then Alexander Chase, at Chase Rate, formerly of Pitcher List, I think put out a tweet that, I think there was something with Cruz's eyesight last year that he potentially corrected. So just something to keep a lookout for. Like, there's not much that needs to go right for Nelson Cruz to be awesome in San Diego, right? Like, he was still being drafted as this aging wonder, right, as early as last year. So if there was something, potentially wrong there, it's easy to see it going right if there's something corrected with Cruz. So there, I think for Carpenter too, if that small sample from last year was real, the Yankees were forced to play him every day. He could easily force the Padres to play him every day if that continues.
Yeah, and that was all based on swing changes and a lot of work that he had done. So it didn't really drop out of the sky when you took a closer look at it. So, I think Carpenter has been a super sneaky play. I've got him, I might have as many Carpenter shares as anybody across NFBC leagues.
Like,
and his ADP is like 630. So, he is completely free. And this is a guy who probably for as much as a month last year was the number one fantasy player, just for how hot he was running. So, yeah, I think there are way worse you know, bets to place on that late in drafts or on the waiver wire. So I'm interested in Carpenter. And yeah, Cruz, that's a good shout too. It was a year ago to date when we were saying this could be the David Ortiz, where he just kind of continues to produce. We even liked, after his slow start last year, we did a show on like buying bounce backs, and we liked a lot of Cruz's underlying numbers. So yeah, if there is, you know, a narrative on the vision and that could help him, you know, it's just going to be a playing time situation, but obviously another great lineup to get exposure to. So a couple of good, great names there on the other side of the age curve. So Nelson Cruz and Matt Carpenter, I think either one would probably be hitting in like the middle third, around like sixth or seventh in that lineup, which still is a lot of RBI chances. So I like it a lot.
Yeah, I know Cruz is, you know, definitely more of a DH, and the reports right now are that they're going to share the designated hitter role, but Carpenter has played around basically at all in
first base, second base,
outfield, first base, second base, third base. I don't think he'll be at second or third, but they could shove him in a corner, play him at first.
Like, David Dahl's in right field.
They could easily find a spot for him. You know, do some shuffling there, and get a spot for both of them if their bats are forced to stay in the lineup, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. Shifting to rotation guys that we're watching early on, the Atlanta Braves is probably the most important one, just because you got wins potential. It's obviously a great ball club. And in the interim right now, because they're kind of faced with some injury, the rotation looks a little top heavy. And some new names at the bottom of the rotation are Jared Schuster. And then also, is it Dylan Dodd, mm-hmm. who should be mm-hmm. kind of rounding out that rotation?
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, Dodd, it seems like is probably a little bit more short term, but in the minors, he's posted a strikeout per inning. You know, he's just 24. Like, this is a guy who, you know, I think at least because he's on the Braves, is worth watching. And just, if nothing else, just put him on the watch list. And then with Schuster, you know, this one is a little bit longer term, where he should have a nice runway to, I don't know, maybe 2 months into the season, where I think he's going to have a role here. So Schuster, in terms of like the profile, is not quite as much of a strikeout guy. At least last year in the 50 innings that he had, he was well under a strikeout per inning in AAA, but overall, anytime the Braves, mm-hmm. it's another kind of mini pitching factory mm-hmm. that I think you just owe it to, you know, the roster, the volume, the Braves as a franchise to have these guys on the watch list. So I don't know that I'm like in a hurry there, Steve, but I think those are two guys to just keep an eye on. I don't know if you got anything to add on.
Yeah, something to just keep in mind. I think one of those spots is just because Kyle Wright's like going to miss just like one start, essentially. Like, he's just coming back. It was the shoulder yep. soreness, though, so whenever you see that, it's a little bit concerning, and all that needs to happen is one more hiccup or delay for there to be an extended time. And then another guy that has had trouble staying healthy, to say the least, but that's Mike Soroka, who should, in theory, be coming back for those. So those are, if those two guys, and that's a big if, come back on time, those are those two spots. But definitely intriguing. You know, they had a guy like Kyle Mueller who was really good at AAA, and they obviously had the pitching depth to be able to move on from it, and these are those guys. So definitely worthy of, you know, starts if their schedules are easy to begin with. That's another great thing, to a resource that we should have mentioned and should have mentioned at the top of the show. But Dave Swan put out the expected pitching schedules for the first 2 weeks of the season. So you can kind of already see the matchups and what they're potentially going to be for everyone's rotation. So for those good starts, I would definitely start Schuster and Dodd.
Yeah, great call. That's a streaming tool mm-hmm. for the ages mm-hmm. there with Dave Swan's list there. The next one we wanted to talk about was Ryan Pepio. Talk about exposure to good teams. The Dodgers should have Pepio as a starter. He had some spot starts last year. I think we were all kind of on and off on adding Pepiot, and he's been solid. I mean, he's a strikeout pitcher. Last year, he had 42 strikeouts in 36 innings. He's had well over a strikeout per inning in the preseason so far. And yeah, I mean, there's some good stuff here. He mainly works in a four-seamer, changeup, and slider. But yeah, Pepiot's a name that we've been talking about, Steve, for at least a year and a half as someone that we're just watching. I don't know that it's a rush to add right away because he's had some walk issues, yes. But Pepiot is interesting.
If the walk issues are resolved, then it's a rush to add. I think the command, I don't know if you have the numbers in front of you from the spring, but I believe the command has been better. I think the walks have been better. Like he has, like the changeup is legit. Like the stuff is good, as shown by the amazing strikeout rates at the minors, and then a more than serviceable strikeout rate last year. Just an 11% swinging strike rate last year, though, which is interesting for a 26% K rate. That doesn't quite add up, but I don't think the stuff's a question. It's more of the command, and if the walks are better, I would be rushing to add Pepiot. And like, honestly, if it's a favorable start to start the season, I would add him anyway to sort of hold on and wait and see, even if I don't necessarily start him, but have him on my bench and then see how the command is. Because if it is better, it could be a big breakout.
Yeah, and the strikeouts have been there, but the walks have as well. So he has 24 strikeouts and 17 innings in the preseason, but also has 9 walks across the 17 innings. So has it fully corrected it? The ERA hasn't looked great, a 5.19 ERA. But how much do you read into some of that stuff in spring training? I mean, you might have been working on pitches. Overall, I think the idea is, you know, anytime you have a stuff guy with the Dodgers, and they've been as good as any team in developing pitching talent, I think, yeah, it's watch list and maybe one good start away from being a rush to add. So Pepiot probably very much above Schuster and Dodd in terms of our attention early on in the season. You know, some other guys, Steve, I don't know. I mean, David Peterson got that fifth role. I know we like Tyler McGill, who would be kind of that SP6 odd man out if there is an injury. But Peterson, by all means, flashed some good starts last year, and I think it's a prime example. I mean, I was clamoring all offseason for the Cardinals to make a trade to try to get Peterson or McGill. So I like Peterson. I think he's a good one and kind of under-rostered at like 17% in Yahoo leagues right now. I don't know if you want to add anything on Peterson or if there's any other guy who you want to highlight that's kind of new to a rotation.
No, I think it's a good name for a watch list. Kyle Bradish is a popular breakout pick. I know Paul Spohr wrote him up for a breakout pitcher. Spring wasn't great in terms of the surface numbers, but he did have a good strikeout to walk ratio. Was sort of given that spot. I know it came not necessarily directly at the expense of Grayson Rodriguez not making the team, but Bradish has the talent and definitely is a guy that I'm watching. Camden Yards now a pitcher park. Paul Spohr mentioned this in his article, and I remembered it vividly. He had like a 8.2 inning, 10 strikeout shutout versus the, you know, one out away from a shutout versus the Astros at the end of the last year, which was kind of like an eye-popping moment. So he has the stuff too, and definitely is an interesting watch list name for me. Maybe it's more on the deep list starting pitchers that we'll get into, but definitely, you know, he has a rotation spot, so it is intriguing for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, those are guys who are new to a role. I think like the next batch we have is deep guys who in a lot of cases are just as interesting. Names that we've kind of cooled familiar off on names, just because familiar names. But Josiah Gray great is a spring. Huge one, and he's had a great spring. 14 strikeouts over 16 innings in spring, which isn't the eye popper, but just 2 walks is. And Gray was another guy coming from the Dodgers to the Nationals that we all were rushing to add and couldn't wait to see what he does. And I think it's just a reminder that, you know, the pitching growth isn't linear, prospect growth. And I know the Nats haven't been great at developing talent, especially pitching. But I think Gray has enough of a prospect pedigree that it's very, very interesting. The next one, which is probably the most exciting name across the board and might be rostered quite a bit, but Graham Ashcraft, who was a name throughout last year that we were kind of highlighting from show to show, but Ashcraft has upped his velocity considerably this spring. He had 10 strikeouts in six innings less than a week ago. So I think, you know, the note that a lot of people are talking about with Ashcraft is a new slider grip that he's been putting out. But yeah, this is a guy who's pretty much leading most pitching leaderboards in spring training. I know it's not the best home park with the Reds, but yeah, Ashcraft is one that I think is, I mean, I don't know if he's must roster, but
close
he's
to
pretty
it.
Close, Steve.
Yeah. If there was, we need to name like the spring training hype pitcher award, you know, the out of nowhere hype, this, yeah,
the Kikuchi Award.
Yeah, yes, that's a great name for it, the Kikuchi Award. That this year it goes to maybe Kikuchi himself because he has like, you know, 30 strikeouts this spring training as well. We would joke too in our home league. You know, one of our buddies when Hyunjin Ryu would come up, he had 30 Ks and 30 strikeouts and 30 spring training innings, and you know we were. Yeah, it was before before a Ryu breakout, and like we were like, yeah, well, it was a running joke that, you know, big
yet
deal, yeah,
yeah,
exactly,
Ryu.
And like yeah. We would send pictures of like, you know, Billy Crystal with the Yankees taking a spring training at back. Yeah, he struck out Billy Crystal in spring training. Now everyone's hyped about it. So, but for Ashcraft, you know, when you watch this guy, like he has like a 99-mile-an-hour cutter, you know, throws super hard, has this amazing stuff. And then last year, it's like, how does that translate to just a 15% strikeout rate? And it was just a matter of tweaking a few things, whether it's sequencing a new slider grip. And he has all the raw tools to be this great pitcher. And not only a great pitcher, but like a great strikeout pitcher, which is amazing for fantasy purposes. And it might be happening, and I'm wanting him on every one of my team. Like, I want to find out with him on my team. Like, Ashcraft right. is a guy that I'm adding now and willing to find out because it looks like it's about to happen.
Yeah, and even in the past few days, his ADP is just 369. Mm-hmm. He's around names like Mitch Keller, Kyle Bradish as mm-hmm. well, and then like Alex Wood, Nick Martinez, but... With the ceiling for Ashcraft, I think I would choose him there over all those names. I know Keller is kind of – he's another candidate, right, for the offseason hype.
Exactly. Yeah, we can name the award for him.
We're always
him,
talking
yeah.
about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, Ashcraft is a great name there. I threw some other ones, Steve, some other ones out here with Kyle Muller, Roansy Contreras, Johnny Brito from that's going to get a spot with the mm-hmm. Yankees, with Severino's – arm issues, but you know, I'm not sure how much there is to add here other than the fact that like all offseason we're looking at these super deep targets, you know, for a best ball or like a 50 rounder. And when we get into the home league landscape where you can't roster all these guys, I think it's just important to, you know, kind of star these as watch list players. And, you know, I don't know if there's any ones that jump out. I mean, Roansy, we're not far away from the hype train
no.
on him. So That's probably above the other two. Definitely Roansy, then Muller, then Brito.
And
think.
Like you can't roster all these guys. So like don't you know if you don't have Graham Ashcraft or like you know you didn't just pick up it. Like there's plenty of lottery tickets. Like they're essentially lottery tickets. Some of them smarter than others. Whatever. Like you know there's names to add and guys to go around to be able to jump on it. Just. That's why it's good to have so many names and things to look out for. So it's not like the end of the world if you're not able to add one of them, and you also shouldn't be adding all of them because not all of them are going to pop, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's a good way to round it out. Yeah. But, you know, some of the themes, obviously, let's focus on being aggressive. You don't want to miss opportunities here. But make sure it's guys, and that's why hopefully you drafted names mm-hmm. that you'll know pretty quickly, or, you know, you're not stuck with the headache ones that you want to hold on to. It's like pretty quickly you find out if they're drop worthy or not, but got some names, some strategies, some tactics, but It is opening day, Steve, so I'm super excited. Like I said, I hope my plane Wi-Fi is strong so I can stream all these, but can't wait, man. Our next show, we're going to be talking about stats, and we'll have a good amount because we'll be 2 weeks in, so I'm super pumped, man.
Yeah, it's awesome. Happy opening day. Merry Christmas. It's great to be back.
As always, you guys can follow us on Twitter at WinsAbovePod. I'm at Van_verified, and Steve is at Stav8818. We'll be here every Thursday throughout the season, so appreciate you guys tuning in with us. And yeah, feel free to reach out anytime. You guys can email the show, winsabovefantasy@gmail.com, or send us a tweet if there's a player you want us to break down or any questions you have for your leagues. We are more than happy to work them into the show. But that wraps us up for episode 93. Happy opening day, everybody, and thanks for talking baseball.
Thanks for listening, guys. Happy opening day. Enjoy the baseball.